Stay tuned for Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah, featuring two film critics with distinctly different tastes in movies, Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. He thinks her tastes are shallow. She thinks his are pretentious. Listen in as they discuss and debate new releases and other film-related topics. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net.
Before we even get into the wine, what we're covering tonight, I want to tell you why I think Hannah is extremely disappointed right now. Not crying disappointed, but just disappointed. There are a lot of movies out this week, and we saw a lot of movies. Five between us, some we saw together, some we saw apart. One we didn't see, because they did not screen it for Washington, D.C. critics. Hannah, what did we not see, and why are you sad about that?
I was sad until I read the reviews, and that was Chips, based on the 70s TV show about two California Highway Patrol officers. And I was so looking forward to seeing this when I heard they were making it into a movie. And they did not screen it for us. And from all I've heard, there was good reason for that. And so now I don't want to see it at all because I do not want it to cloud my personal memories of Eric Estrada and Larry Wilcox as Ponch and John in the original Chip series. And so, yes, I'm disappointed we didn't get to see it. But considering how bad I've heard it is, I'm kind of glad I didn't because I do not want to ruin my childhood memories.
We also, there's a sequel we didn't get to see this week. It was screened multiple times for critics. It just slipped through our fingers. We didn't see it. Trainspotting 2. I remember the first Trainspotting. I really liked it. I remember it was so hard to listen to because the really thick Scottish accents of Ewan McGregor and Johnny Lee Miller and Robert Carlyle. But no, I did not catch up with the Scottish blokes.
I haven't heard anything about it. That's also very interesting that it just seems to have not only slipped through the cracks from the movies we were able to see in the past week, but also it's not that it rose to the top where anybody was talking about how, oh, we missed this great movie or we really need to see it.
Well, we are going to talk about five films this evening. The first one, only I saw. It's Power Rangers, probably the biggest release of the week. The next one is another big release that only you saw called Life. So I'm really interested to hear what you have to say about that. There's one we both saw by the auteur Terrence Malick called Song to Song. You're giving something away there.
Sorry.
I'm kidding. There's one you saw called Wilson, based off of work by Daniel Clowes. And there's one I saw called Raw. And so I paired the wine for Raw tonight and it's called Carnivore. Raw has a theme in it. Maybe cannibalism. The tasting of the forbidden
flesh,
the forbidden meat. You know, it's the other white meat. So, yeah, I got a 2015 Zinfandel from California called Carnivore, and it's terrible. It's awful.
It tastes exactly like a carnivore wine.
This is probably what blood tastes like.
It has a really bad aftertaste. It's a little brutal, but
I'm gonna drink it.
I'll drink this one glass, but I will not be sharing that bottle.
All right. Well, we'll kick it off with Power Rangers. Now, Power Rangers is they're rebooting it. It was started as a kids television show in 1993, and apparently it's had 23 seasons. It's still on the air.
I missed all 23.
Well, and it's not a reboot for me. Yeah. I was too old. I was 12, 13 in 1993. I was too old for Power Rangers, so I didn't watch it, and I haven't watched it, and I didn't watch the first movie that came out in 1995 called Mighty Morphin Power Rangers movie. And so this was not a reboot to me. This is a brand new film for me, but the fanboys were out. There was a guy in my row, older than me, and he said, yeah, I think I've seen 21 of the 23 seasons. So there were people in this crowd really excited for this film, and I didn't hear any disappointments.
Like, really?
It's not good. I don't know exactly who it's for. It's not for little kids. You know what? I do know who it's for. I take it back. It's for the nostalgia kicks, the nostalgia guys. Oh, I remember that, so I like it because I remember it.
But by that theory, Chips should have been considered likable by people who were familiar with that series.
And maybe it is. You didn't see
it? I don't think so. Not from anything I've heard initially. We'll find out. But yeah, I was not a Power Rangers person.
So I didn't know anything about the Power Rangers mythology. I didn't know why they were different colors, why they morphed from regular high school going teenagers into the superheroes. So I learned the mythology, and man, it is hard not to sit here and poke holes in it. It leaves itself open for some really, really And I don't even want to go into the plot because it's just not worth it. So I'll talk about the surrounding atmosphere of this film. There are a couple people in it you actually know. They're all the new teenagers you don't know, except for one, I think you do. And he's actually the best of the five Power Rangers. We know him. His name's RJ Seiler. He's from Me and Earl and the Dying Girl. Oh. And it's Earl.
Wow.
Earl is the Blue Ranger. Billy Cranston, his name's like the brains of the operation. And he's good. I really liked watching him. Good on him. Way to go, RJ Seiler. You're making something of yourself. The villain, the Green Fallen Ranger, the really evil witch, is Elizabeth Banks. And a lot of people are saying, oh, she's just up there having a good time. You could say she's just, yeah, I guess, but it's just Elizabeth Banks up there cackling like a witch. I'm going to get you, Power Rangers. And Bryan Cranston.
Oh, wow.
Not in the flesh, Bryan Cranston. He's a voice. He plays a guy floating around the walls of a ship. Zordon, kind of like the Yoda, if you will. And he's apparently he was in early seasons of the Power Rangers as a voice.
I can see that timing-wise before he hit it big.
The director is a man named Dean Israelite. He did Project Almanac a couple years ago. That was a teenager time travel film. Not bad, not great. I remember watching it. I enjoyed it. And there's controversy with Power Rangers. So last week there was controversy with Beauty and the Beast. Why was there controversy with Beauty and the Beast, Hannah?
The gay scene.
Le Feu. Well, there's controversy with Power Rangers because the Yellow Ranger is a lesbian. At least I think so. Because she goes on about hating labels and maybe having a girlfriend. But they never name it, and they do everything to hint that she is an LGBTQ superhero, the first one ever or whatever. But they don't talk about it. They don't say the name. So therefore, Malaysia almost banned it, and Russia gave it this really high rating, like rated R.
Uh-huh.
And
rating R, the Power Rangers, that's just sad.
Because it's slightly hinted at that she might be a lesbian, but again, it's like LeFou might be gay. Like, you really have to go out of your way to say that.
Yeah.
So it's a second big film in a week where there's kind of an alternative lifestyle character, which, great. I'll take a homosexual superhero any day of the week. That's awesome. But do something with it.
Well, or maybe their whole point is that they're just another person. They're just another one of these characters. And if whatever their orientation maybe doesn't fit into the plot, it's sort of kind of irrelevant.
But they tried.
There's
this like campfire scene, and it's like they're all telling each other their problem. And oh Lord, I almost forgot to mention it. The Breakfast Club. You know, by the way, today's March 24th. March 24th was the day of the Breakfast Club. Shermer, Illinois High School detention. It was for them. It was a Saturday. For us, it's a Friday. So happy anniversary of the Breakfast Club.
Yeah, that's a classic.
Power Ranger starts with three of the five Power Rangers in detention. Very Breakfast Club style. Mm-hmm. Like, you could almost see him, like, you could, you know, the principal walk in, you owe me an essay. And it's not for you. This movie's not for you. This movie's not for me. It's not for my kid. It's not for today's teenagers who would just roll their eyes at it. It's for guys who go to Comic-Con and really relish the memories of them growing up watching this martial arts television show.
Okay, fair enough.
You know, and it's not terrible. Like, I didn't make comments under my breath like I did at another film this week. Apparently they're gonna make five more of these.
Oh, wow.
And that's really all I have to say. There's not a lot to say about Power Rangers. It won't kill you, but why would you go see it? I have no idea why. Yeah. So, but now I'm very intrigued. Life is coming out. I saw bits and pieces. The preview I saw, Jake Gyllenhaal, I saw it was science fiction in space, International Space Station, but that's all I know about it. Talk to me about Life, Hannah.
Yeah, it's this very strange, it starts kind of like The Martian. I was all excited because I really love that movie, and you've got Ryan Reynolds and Jake Gyllenhaal, so you've got this really solid cast.
Deadpool's in there?
It's written, the writers wrote Deadpool, which probably explains how they ended up getting Ryan Reynolds in this movie. Because the character is, it's one of those ones where you just kind of go, what happened? And so I don't want to spoil it, but let's just say you've got this team of scientists who are on the International Space Station. A probe has just come back from Mars with a soil sample.
Probes.
They're all excited that they have this soil sample and they're excited to try and prove that life can exist within this soil sample. So they add something to it.
Water?
Like some kind of sugar water, glucose and water. And then, what do you know?
Uh-oh.
It kind of comes to life, and this single cell organism replicates and grows and grows and grows. And as much as they've tried to contain it within an area of the space station and in this lab, this thing becomes like this humongous jellyfish blob thing with tentacles.
It reminds me of don't feed the Mogwai after midnight. You'll get gremlins.
It's like if you took Arrival and made it into and it became a true horror movie, like an alien monster movie. That's what this was, and that's not what I think people were expecting. It didn't have the wit and the fun of a Martian or a Deadpool even. And so when you think that it was this writer and Ryan Reynolds, you kind of wanted to see more of that layer of fun. And it isn't. It evolves into this horror movie. And so essentially this giant blob thing feeds off of oxygen wherever he can find it. And they suddenly realize aboard the space station, as this thing kind of starts eating everybody, that they need to prevent it from getting to Earth. That the worst thing that could happen is this thing ends up getting to Earth. It's then going to potentially keep replicating and destroy the people on Earth. And so it ends up it all takes place on the space station. And then it really boils down to just two characters and what they're doing. It reminded me a little bit of Passengers, which I now, in relatively speaking, I liked Passengers way more. So you have to be okay with a horror movie. It's not your traditional kind of space movie. I saw it on a giant IMAX screen.
Yeah, tell us where you saw it, because I think that's kind of a bit of the experience.
It was the reason I went to go see it was that they were showing it on the giant screen at the Air and Space Museum in the IMAX theater. And so it was
The Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum. Hannah.
So it was a very special screening. And so that part was cool. And I thought, because it was showing at the Air and Space Museum, that it was going to be a little more mainstream in its approach. And in fact, it's a horror movie. It's an alien kind of movie. And, with a fairly high body count, all things considered. And the worst thing was that it became a bit of a mess. I mean, there were moments in the first half hour where they try to briefly give you backstories of all these characters, one's just had a baby on Earth and he's watching via Skype that he now has a new baby. Another one, the Jake Gyllenhaal character, is kind of quickly set up as that guy who's been on the space station for over a year, and it's like the longest person to be on the space station, and he doesn't really like Earth anyway, so he's happy to just be able to stay out in space. And so you get just these kernels of backstory on these individuals, but you never care enough about any of them to really. And so that's the movie's biggest flaw. And then at the end, when everybody was just kind of ready for it to end, they hinted a sequel. And so there was a moment where I thought this movie was over, and it should have been over. And instead, it was felt like they tacked on this extra scene that would allow them to potentially do a sequel. But I think I can't imagine that this movie will do well enough to ever bear out a sequel.
Yeah, I was as you were describing the plot, I was comparing it to other movies. So you mentioned a sample from Mars. It's like, ooh, maybe it's like The Martian. Doesn't sound like it's like The Martian. Then I thought, okay, they're in space and they're kind of sort of with a foreign being. So I thought, Europa Report. Okay, doesn't sound like Europa Report. Then I got it. It's like they're headed towards Earth. This thing might get on Earth in an Alien Resurrection.
Yes.
Alien 4.
Yes.
That's exactly what it sounds
like.
Which
is coming out. And so because you have
this new Alien Covenant.
No, but because you have this new Alien movie coming out, a lot of people are saying that this movie will suffer from bad timing because it's not good enough to be out when people are already thinking about this new Alien movie coming out and how well done the Alien movies were. So to have this Life movie that on the surface looks like it has star power going for it and should be very intriguing, it is, in the end, it is a space horror movie. And so you have to really be into that particular genre. Same with Power Rangers. Like, okay, you know what? There's some people that are going to really want to go see Power Rangers. There might be some people that are going to really want to go see an alien-esque space horror movie. But you kind of need to know what you're in for, and that's who will possibly enjoy it on some level. But for the most part, it was disappointing.
You mentioned Passengers. I wonder what Passengers would have been like with an alien on board.
Well, it was kind of that same idea, though, with Passengers. If you'll remember, it's like you had like this good-looking guy and girl at the end who were trying to make sacrifices to save the Earth. And that's, in some ways, that's still what's going on here. But it does not have the you just don't like the people enough to care whether they live or die at a certain point. And this big jelly blob thing is just, it's just gross.
Jelly
and there are moments where you're just like, oh my God, where it like goes into it through people's mouths and body parts explode. And
so another good tie into carnivore.
Yes.
The crappy wine.
So when I saw your crappy wine tonight, I actually was immediately drawn to the fact that it wasn't just about the movie Raw that you're going to talk about, but it would actually apply quite well to the little blobby thing in life.
Well, it also applies to our next film, Song to Song, because it sucks.
True that.
We've talked about Terrence Malick before on this podcast. Knight of Cups came out just last year. And I remember I liked it better than you. I think it was your worst film of the year was Knight of Cups.
I think so.
So we all knew, all the critics that were there a couple days ago at the screening, we were laughing, we were chuckling with each other, we were poking fun at each other, because we knew what we were in for. We knew we were going to get it. We were going to get a chronology-hopping, horribly edited, confusing,
abstract,
somewhat dialogue-y, but mostly voiceover on top of that dialogue, so you don't really know what's going on, but it's the experience, it's the feeling. I hated this movie more than I didn't hate Knight of Cups. I didn't technically hate this one, but this just made me mad. Terrence Malick knows how to make a film with a narrative structure human beings can understand. 1973, his first film ever was Badlands. I watched it a couple hours before we watched Song to Song, because I wanted to see that he actually knew how to make a film. And he does. It's great. Martin Sheen, when he's really young. Sissy Spacek. It was awesome. I just love that movie. And he did The New World in 2005. An actual movie about Jamestown. And then Tree of Life, To the Wonder, Knight of Cups, and this thing. Even though I knew what I was in for, it hurt. It was over 2 hours of... I just remember, he almost had me. The first hour of the film, it was still scratchy, but in there was almost a movie, Hannah.
Yeah, no, I thought for the first hour, I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. I think I'm tracking the narrative here. And it has, you know, Ryan Gosling in it and Michael Fassbender. And you're like, what can be wrong with this movie? And then all of a sudden... And that was even despite the fact that even though I was following the narrative, I still hate the device he uses with these vignettes and things that's just kind of stream of consciousness edited together that just make very little sense. But I was essentially tracking this as some sort of love triangle around the music industry. I kind of got that. And then there was like two love triangles, and then those triangles sort of intersected. And then all of a sudden there was girl on girl stuff, and then there was girl on girl on girl stuff with guy watching. And it just went absolutely off the rails. The story no longer made any sense. The ending didn't make any sense. And the best part of that movie experience, Charlie, is I won the pool of how many people would walk out of this film.
So I think Knight of Cups is still the winner. Like a full, I think a full quarter of that theater walked out of Knight of Cups.
But from a totally numeric perspective, I had counted, I think, about 12 people walking out of Knight of Cups.
Is that it, really, 12?
And there were more than that. There were at least, I would say, 15 to 20.
Now, a song I saw... I wasn't counting like you were, but I would believe you if you told me 17 to 20 people got him walked out.
I was having a fun time with my little counter in the dark, actually just writing these little dashes and paying attention to who maybe slipped back because they were going to the bathroom. Very few came back. Some people love this type of garbage.
Hammacher, John Armstrong. Some people love this. This is the fourth time Malick has done something like this. I'm not going to count the Thin Red Line, even though that voiceover garbage was in there. This is the fourth time he's done it. So it's no longer edgy. You can't call it experimental or avant-garde anymore, because it's the fourth time in a row he's done it. And it's annoying. And Rooney, I'm going to talk about Rooney Mara. So you can tell, he didn't write a script. Terrence Malick didn't write a script and give it to the actors to table read and memorize their lines. He gives them very vague notes about what the scene is. Here, you're happy. Show me happy. And they make up their dialogue on the spot. And that shows, especially with Rooney Mara. And then sometimes you can hear actual declarative sentences. You couldn't in Nine of Cups. It was mostly the and a and an eye roll. Here, there are words. There are sometimes paragraphs. But there's still the stupid voiceover, especially Rooney Mara, who says, I think about four times, "Who am I?" And then my favorite, "I played with the fire of life.
I played with the fire of life.
I love the pain of life."
And that's exactly what...
What?
That's what Terrence Malick does, is it's all like, you're supposed to appreciate this for its artistic merit, which is, if you don't get it, then you just don't get it.
I don't. That's the Washington Post thing, by the way. If you don't get it, you don't get it.
Yeah. And I don't get it. I felt like, with all of Terrence Malick's movies now, from The Tree of Life on to this one, you could actually intercut anything from any of those movies.
This is kind of like a Knight of Cups sequel.
They're all the same.
I think Christian Bale was supposed to be in it.
Apparently he shot stuff, and he didn't make the 8-hour, when the director's cut had to be...
And that shows me Malick didn't know what the movie was.
No.
He shot 8 hours of footage, and only in the editing room did he say, "All right, I think I'll make a movie out of this stuff over here."
I was very jealous of the folks that walked out, and I understood
60,
it.
60, I'm going to say, you can agree with me or not, 60% of this film is just two of the characters, and any characters, rubbing up on each other.
Yes!
Fassbender and Mara, Gosling and Mara, Natalie Portman's in it, we haven't talked about that, Fassbender and Portman, Rooney Mara and her lesbian fling, group sex with Fassbender, with Portman out there on the patio crying, and... There's actually a really good sequence in this film. Like, the reason I don't hate it is because the sequence where Michael Fassbender meets Natalie Portman, and they go on dates, and they get to know one another, and they end up getting married. That sequence is awesome, because there's hardly any voiceover. They're talking to each other, and you're watching this, like a montage sequence of that. And that, good on them. I like that part.
That's when I was still tracking it, narratively.
And notice I call them Fassbender, Gosling, Mara, and apparently they have character names. But how do people know their names? They never say them.
They never say them. And not only that, but just like his previous movies, he picks characters that all look freaking alike. And so certainly for the first hour, even beyond, there are times where I really am not sure which character I'm looking at first. Because they'll suddenly, it's like all the dark-haired girls all look the same. The dark-haired guys all look the same. And it was very hard sometimes to actually figure out, especially when it was in this very cinema verite kind of approach, exactly whose story you were going back to. And then you're supposed to pick up on all these conversations that are happening in the background. And I think he really thinks that that's such a great device. But unless you are just one of those Terrence Malick fans, you're not going to care.
I got tired of playing Guess the Chronology.
Yes.
Because you don't know where you are whenever he edits into a new scene, which is every 4.5 seconds. You have to find out, all right, when am I, where am I, and who's rubbing up on each other now?
Yeah, and where are, right, where are they in this narrative? And I completely lost track after the first hour. And what started out as something that I thought this might not be as god-awful bad as Knight of Cups, basically is on par. I would put it possibly a smidge, a hair above Knight of Cups.
So your second worst movie of the
year. So it would be right up there with that. I'm just done with him. I go to these Terrence Malick movies now, just hoping to see if he'd break that string for me.
I think he does. He's already made another film, and I think it's conventional.
Conventional. So we'll see. But yeah, not good.
Well, our final two films, we split. They're both small films, both indies. So we'll talk about yours first. You went to see a film called Wilson, and I really wanted to see this one because it's based on a graphic novel and written by Daniel Clowes. Daniel Clowes did the graphic novel of one of my favorite movies of all time, Ghost World, 2001's Ghost World, directed by Terry Zwigoff. I love that movie, and I still love that movie. So tell me about Wilson. Is it...
It's you would have liked it. I think you would like it more than the most. I think it was fine. It was probably my favorite of the lot this week, which isn't saying all that much, but it does give it a little bit of a boost. It is a small indie, a quirky one, but one of those, it's, you know, it's a Woody Harrelson vehicle. And so if you like Woody Harrelson, he carries this movie. It is his movie to sort of, he's the central character. He plays this sort of lonely, neurotic, way too honest middle-aged guy who's trying to figure out, you know, where he's at in life and what to do with his life. And he's just sort of been mooching off of friends, living with them, and then they move away. And so he's got to kind of figure out where he's going. And he decides to sort of track down his, I don't know if it's his estranged wife or his ex-wife, Pippi, who's played by Laura Dern. And so he finds her and discovers that he thought she had just walked out on him when she, and had an abortion. She had told him that that she was having an abortion and she had left him. And he comes to find out that that she had, in fact, had the baby and given it up for adoption. And so then all of a sudden they go and they find their now angst-ridden teenage daughter, who's sort of very – is kind of on the overweight side and is – somewhat bullied at school, but she's living with a very nice family. She's in a very wealthy neighborhood, so she's had a pretty good life. But they sort of want to form a connection with her and create this image of a family. And but it is a quirky movie, and so you've got to realize that it takes a very twisted turn. And essentially, this guy Wilson ends up in jail for kidnapping. And it kind of based on a misunderstanding. And then it really just is about what this all does, how this changes the course of his life, and how he comes to grow a little bit from being this curmudgeonly guy who's very brutally honest with people in a very awkward way. You would appreciate this, Charlie. He's the kind of guy that it could be a completely empty train, and he will sit next to the one guy sitting there reading the newspaper and will start talking to him and not let him read his paper. And so you're not the curmudgeonly one. You're the guy reading the paper.
Yeah, it's like, don't talk to me.
No, and exactly. And yet he just starts a conversation, and it's obvious that they're like, this entire train is completely empty and you have to sit right next to me and start a conversation when I'm obviously trying to read. And so this happens everywhere. It happens to him when he's on the bus. He stops, sits down at a coffee shop with these outside tables where some guy's on his laptop with his headphones on trying to do work. And he sits at this guy's table. And the guy's very annoyed. And so it's funny. It's got a few of those moments.
Well, I saw the movie poster. It's
like dark comedy.
It's him at a urinal next to another guy. Yes, and there's like five other empty urinals.
And so, exactly. And so that's a recurring theme throughout, that he is obtrusive in other people's space.
So is it funny?
It's dark comedy.
It sounds awkward, and I don't like awkward comedy a lot.
But It's hard to define it, but I would – and it's got a good supporting cast. I mean, it's got in addition to Laura Dern, it has Judy Greer, Margot Martindale, Cheryl Hines is in it for a few minutes. And they provide that sort of comic punch to this movie and supporting Wilson's idiosyncrasies.
You know, Wilson's – when you say he's brutally honest and idiosyncrasies, it sounds like Woody Harrelson's character from The Edge of 17.
It's – no, he's more sympathetic and you like him more in Edge of 17. In this one, he is more of he truly is a loner and does not have any real connections. In Edge of 17, you come to learn that he's really a family man and he is a good teacher. And in this one, it's like, no, this is really who he is and this is what his life has been. And he's made some strange choices and he's just always operated in his own way and expected other people to be okay with that. And it's just really hard to figure out whether you would call it a dark comedy. It's just one of those ones where quirky and independent are certainly top of the line. And it is Woody Harrelson. And so it is, in some ways, it's like your latest incarnation on what's become a somewhat traditional Woody Harrelson character.
No, I believe I would like it. Sounds like right up my alley, because it sounds like Ghost World. And how much I look fondly back on that film. Thora Birch is in it. Very, very young Scarlett Johansson. Yeah, I think Wilson might be right up my alley.
Yeah, it's got enough cynicism in it that you should like it.
The one I saw at the exact same time across town it's not up your alley. You would not like it. It's called Raw. And I believe it's from Wallonia. It's Belgium. It's from a first-time writer-director named Julia Ducournau. And I don't want to say too much, but the marketers are...
Oh, go ahead. Nobody's going to see this movie, Charlie.
The marketers, the distributors behind this are... They're hyping it up because apparently during its festival run, it went to Toronto and it went to some other festivals. Some people in the audience have fainted, dry heaved, and vomited.
Yes. And barf bags for everyone.
At my screening, they handed out barf bags. And they handed out little tiny candies that kind of look like severed fingers. So I gave it to my kid and he loved it. Ugh. So Justine, she's 16. She's a freshman at this very exclusive, very competitive veterinary school. She's going to become a veterinarian. Her parents are veterinarians. Her older sister's already at the school a couple years ahead of her. And then she's coming in as like the prodigal daughter. She's going to be... Her parents are the best. She's going to be the best. And she already has the best test score. She's already kind of marked. And this school is... I don't know if it's standard in Belgium veterinary schools. They have a very intense hazing initiation. So the first night, they throw everyone's mattresses out. They march them all in their underwear naked and make them crawl on all fours and force feed them alcohol and pour pig's blood on them. And they make them eat raw rabbit kidneys. Now, you know, this is kind of, okay, gross. I'll eat my rabbit kidney and move on. But to Justine, who's a strict vegetarian, never had a piece of meat in her entire life, her entire 16 years, is force fed this rabbit kidney and something happens to her physically. This transformation, this metamorphosis. She's into the meat. She starts with a hamburger, moves on to the raw chicken. You see her roommate sees her scarfing down the raw chicken out of the fridge in the morning. And then she moves on to even more forbidden meat. And it's fascinating.
The carnivore wine that we're drinking.
How she gets to, you know, the scenes where, you know, she gets a hold of certain things and who she chooses to munch on. And it's like she has no control over it. It takes her over. Some people said it's a metaphor for sexual awakening or female power. It didn't even cross my mind. I thought, I took it literally. This girl likes meat. And I suppose it could be a metaphor for this transformation. Girl 16, it's a very transformative time in a girl's life. Sure, I guess it's in there, but I took it literally. Like, oh, okay, girl never had some meat, now she wants some meat.
Yeah, there are many ways to read that.
And, well, her roommate, she's paired with a guy. She lives with a guy roommate, but it's okay because he's gay. And she gets so turned on, like, sexualized by this meat that they end up, like, having a fling. And there's some death in this film. There's some blood in this film. There's some... appendages getting lopped off in this film. It's billed as a horror film, but it's more of a drama. It's more of a think piece.
Oh,
you know?
Sure.
I never got queasy, and no one used their barf bags because it was full of an audience that wanted to be there.
Yeah.
It was an audience that was prepared to see a cannibal film, and they're already horror fans. And when I was researching to write up my review for this, it struck me, you know what? There are a lot of films about cannibalism. Anything involving Hannibal Lecter, and there's already like five of those films. I remember the creators of South Park did Cannibal the Musical. There was Alive about the plane crash in South America.
Oh, right. I remember that one.
I remember Trouble Every Day starring Vincent Gallo. I saw that back in college, I think in 2001. So there's a lot. That one was just disgusting.
So if you love
The Green Inferno.
So what's the point? If you love a good cannibal flick,
it's worth seeing. The reason I didn't love this because of the subject matter, because it's so shocking. Yes, I love a good shocking movie. This was why I went to see this. The 16-year-old, Justine. She's played by Garance Molinier. She is phenomenal, spectacular. WAFCA, the critics group we belong to, the Washington, D.C. Film Critics, has in our annual awards, one of the awards is Best Youth Performance. This girl, number one on my list, Garance Molinier.
Thank goodness it's only March.
She is so good.
We have 9 more months to find better competitors for that category. I'm sure she is good, but are enough people going to see this movie for her to be remembered
for this
role? I think
this is one of those things that actually could, because this is one of those things that's primed to become a cult classic. You know, like, have you seen Raw? I dare you to see Raw. And when that happens, it's almost like Get Out. It's almost like, it's not going to be as big as that. No, not at all. But it's in that same vein. It's a cult movie. And when you see Justine munching on her own arm, just get some blood out of there.
And I saw just the movie poster itself, where it's like this girl with the human blood all over her face. Like, she's obviously just eaten something.
There's a twist ending, which I had... Oh, man, I was shocked. The whole audience went, whoa!
She goes back to being a vegetarian?
No spoilers here, Hannah. But this is my, by far, favorite film of the week. It's not a great film. It's a good film. It's a good horror film. If you like to go to the movies and be shocked every now and then, or just see a good youth performance, go see Raw.
Well, then you're going to have to choose between the horror film that is Life and the horror film that is Raw. So I think maybe you have a double feature in there somewhere.
But don't drink the red wine that is Carnivore.
Do not drink Carnivore. Or maybe you should drink Carnivore before you see both of these movies. But I was seeing Wilson while you were seeing
And I had to make Raw. A tough choice that night.
And so I think you should see Wilson, but I am not going to go see Raw.
No, I will not see Wilson until you see Raw.
So if we get screeners Wilson and Raw, I will then watch.
But I think we're more likely to get screener of Raw than Wilson.
Really?
Absolutely.
I don't know. We'll see.
All right. Well, let's do a quick wrap up. Power Rangers, you know, it won't hurt anybody, but there's no one listening to this podcast, unless you're a fanboy, is going to be interested in seeing this movie. It's not for anybody.
Yeah. It's not for me.
Life,
really, only horror sci-fi fans, maybe.
Song to Song? No. I am just... Terrence Malick has worn out his welcome. I'm just so tired of that man.
He wore out his welcome 3 movies ago for me and has done nothing to change my mind.
Wilson.
Yeah. If you like a quirky indie, sure.
Raw.
No.
Heck yeah.
No.
That movie is really fun. You'll have a good time. The audience kind of plays in it together. Everyone goes, ew, at the exact same time. You'll have fun at Raw.
Just don't eat first.
No, that's why I think you should take in a big old hamburger and munching out of my ear.
That's right. Smuggle some food in. Smuggle in a burger. That would be hysterical.
It makes a loud smacking noise.
Yes. And if anyone sees Chips, let me know if it's worth seeing, if it's any good. Otherwise, I'm just going to go and set my DVR to record a few episodes on some retro TV channel.
Is Chips still on TV somewhere?
It constantly
reappears.
I've
never seen an episode of Chips.
Well, I'm going next time it comes back on. In fact, I think it's on MeTV. So I'm going to make you check it out and see a couple of episodes.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to this episode of The Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl.
Thank you.
Take care.
Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah is presented twice each weekend on RadioSt.Pete.com at 5:15 Eastern on Saturday and 9:15 on Sunday mornings. Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. Listen again for Cinema Clash on Radio St. Pete.